Hi, and welcome back to This Person I Met. Today's interviewee is Jen Peacock, the Policy Director for the Michigan Center for Youth Justice, which is an organization focused on ensuring that youth in the juvenile justice system have equitable access to qualified legal representation. To give you some background, Michigan has a decentralized system, which means that juvenile court services and programming are managed at the county level. This means varied application of practices and significant differences in treatment, aka justice by geography. And while the system for youth is not identical to that of the adult legal system, attorneys, administrators, prosecutors, and judges all still play major roles in influencing the outcome of youth in the juvenile system. Can you kind of introduce yourself and tell me what role you play in MCYJ?
Sure. So my name is Jen Peacock, and I serve as the Policy Director for the Michigan Center for Youth Justice.
And how long have you been in this organization?
I just hit my 2-year mark not that long ago. So it feels like a lot longer, but also in a blink of an eye.
How did you sort of come into this role?
I started my career I was living in DC at the time, and I was doing a lot of national youth programming work, supporting Indigenous youth, doing everything from like civic engagement to cultural revitalization projects, climate change advocacy. And over time, my brain definitely started reflecting on, you know, I love working with young people directly, but what does it look like to affect change in the systems that are influencing them? I also felt a call to like work for my state. I'm a very proud Midwest gal. So I was itching to come home, and I saw this role, and I thought it would be a new challenge to kind of, what would it look like to try to shift into policy space and support young people through that avenue.
And then what about MCYJ as an organization? Like, can you tell me a little about its history, kind of like what it's aiming to do? What are its priorities?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So MCYJ has technically been around since like 1950s, and it was actually called the Michigan Council on Crime and Delinquency. And so it started as like kind of a means to address the laws and policies that were aimed at, you know, addressing crime and making sure that they were fair and effective. But then in 2020, my understanding is late 2019, the team at the time was really doing that exploration of the Michigan landscape. And they realized that there was a lot of folks on the adult criminal justice space, but there were really a lack of folks solely directed at digging into juvenile justice reform. And so come 2020, that really was the rebrand and what we know as MCYJ today. And so, you know, we're all about improving outcomes for kids and ensuring a fair, safe, and effective system. We're really primarily a policy and advocacy organization, right? We're not direct service in that way. We provide technical assistance to localities looking to kind of dig into their own system or help folks that want to broaden their service menu for kiddos and to be that thought partner. And just, you know, our priorities are really to kind of prevent crime and reduce youth involvement in the justice system. We want to promote the use of diversion and assure equal access to justice in the courts. We really try to, you know, prioritize community-based services and improving the safety and well-being of young people across a lot of different areas, I would say.
And how do you go about doing this? Is it mostly kind of like, are you aiming to change policies, or what are you doing to address these things?
Yeah, it really runs the gamut on the topic, which is kind of fun, right? So we're really fortunate to be invited to a lot of tables within the state. So maybe, you know, our executive director has sat on multiple advisory committees or task forces, but it's also at the local level. So sometimes we're invited to sit on different county teams focused on juvenile justice. Sometimes it's us, you know, building, none of this work in policy can be done alone. So it's connecting with a lot of great folks to say, what are our collective priorities to overhaul JJ? And then from there, it's a lot of, you know, my role in particular is going to Lansing and talking with legislators and trying to support whether it's funding advocacy or statute changes and really try to engage folks at that level. So it's kind of a mix of like state broad kind of reforms, but then maybe it's that technical assistance locally to really dig in on maybe just one county's system, for example.
And in doing so, do you ever interact with the actual people that are like the actual youth that are being affected, or is it kind of just more so like at the higher levels, like
Yeah, that's a great question. So we've spent a lot of time trying to be thoughtful in our youth and family engagement. So we actually have a colleague who that is her designated role. And so with time, we're hoping to continue to scale that. So we have a few different initiatives and approaches that we're doing right now that are directly to engage youth that have been systems involved and their families. And we also are always, I love doing a good focus group to inform my policy work or how can I compensate folks for collaborating with us on their lived experience to inform what we're doing. So it's, I would say it's something we're still developing and building, but it's work that we want to keep growing to keep informing our work and also bringing, I love to bring people to Lansing with me to meet with legislators. I think that's such a positive experience to have that direct kind of impact. So that's also something I hope to keep growing and building, I would say.
And I know you've kind of touched on this already, but what are like some specific things that you're hoping to change when you like go to Lansing and try and like propose these things?
So right now, I would say the big, ticket priority that we're us and a lot of other people are digging into is juvenile defense. So do you want me to share a little context of what that? Okay.
That'd be great.
So juvenile in, let's see. So there was a task force done, and I'm sure we'll touch on that at some point, but it was found that Michigan, we don't actually have any type of structure or baseline standards or resources for juvenile public defense statewide. And so this absence of kind of like state funding and this authority for the Michigan Indigent Defense Commission to support that work has really created this huge gap for kids and their families in this system and this uneven access to public defenders. And so that can have a really detrimental impact on young people's cases. They might even be willing to plead out more because they don't have that attorney to support them. And so for me and a lot of our other stakeholders, we really view that as the foundation, right? Like public defenders are such a backbone, and they themselves as practitioners deserve to have all the robust supports that they can. And so that's something we're pretty passionate about, and that we're hopeful to finish this legislative session at the end of the year. But that's our big ticket right now.
And then what about like, do you also deal with sort of like other aspects of this whole like system? Like, are you also interested in sort of improving like conditions within juvenile justice, like detention facilities, or like even afterwards, like their quality of life after being released? Or is it so sort of just focused around like, the defense aspect of it.
Oh yeah, that's a great question. For us, it's so right now that's kind of like the big active legislative piece that so I'll be honest, so much of our work is informed by what can be done with the makeup of the legislature that we have. And so I would say that while that's like the big active piece legislatively, we're also doing because a lot of some what's interesting is some of these things that you're connecting to, like reintegration that is hyper local. And so while we want to keep, you know, I'm someone who I believe the system should have a robust investment and we can push long term, you know, the next budget cycle is already coming up, which is wild. And we can keep pushing for additional funds for those community-based care systems. There's actually a lot we can do locally to kind of partner with the communities to think through, well, look at all the service array you're providing locally. What are the gaps? You know, if we're having young people, let's say, who are being sent out of the county to access things like drug use treatment, what would it look like for counties to get creative with their funding and have their own day treatment program? What are the costs of that? And thinking through those things, or how can they leverage support from a county over? So we're definitely thinking through those things, and I know we're really trying to dig into that community-based care piece. But it's just something that can be done outside of the legislature, which is good because the more ways you can affect change, I think the better.
And have the disparities in like access to defense, has it always been in the system, or is it something that's kind of like been a more recent problem?
No, so it's kind of always been that way. So you could almost liken to where kids are today as kind of where the adult system was 10 years ago. And so it is a long haul, but only, I'd have to look up the date, forgive me, but there have been Supreme Court cases that really show like this is a constitutional right for our kids. And I think that ruling and access to a lot more research, you know, the Galt Center does great work in this space, has really allowed folks to really advocate for it effectively, because now we really can say we know the impact it's having, and it being rolled into the Juvenile Justice Task Force helped to bolster folks to be like, okay, this is something worth watching, even though we all knew it was, but it's something where when it's baked into a task force like that and it's a unanimous thing from all these different stakeholders that range from systems impacted families to, you know, there were court stakeholders and service providers, you know, the folks like us at the table. It really shows that, oh, this is something that's possible because we're all kind of in sync. We're all unanimously supporting it. And in policy, having that alignment is really key on what we can get done.
And I noticed on your website that one of your like priorities was the implementation of a reform bill that was passed in 2023, I think. Yeah. Kind of what was the significance of that? What is the impact of that, and why are you so interested in implementing that bill?
Yeah. Oh, it's so exciting. We all still geek out about it. It actually went into effect earlier this month, so it still feels really fresh. So the Justice for Kids and Communities package was really born from the task force that was created by Governor Whitmer and then chaired by the Lieutenant Governor. And it was those stakeholders, right, that cross collaborative of folks coming together to be like, what recommendations do we need after an assessment of our state to improve laws, policies, and of course, funding for this system? And so that occurred, or process started, I want to say in 2021. And then by last winter, if last fall, the bills passed, and it was 19 total bills. And it's really trying to, you know, how do we improve youth outcomes, maintain and strengthen that public safety by informed decision making, and use those state resources more effectively. And so I think for us, there were a lot of great things. It's 19 bills, so I won't dig into all of it, but I would say one top line thing, of course, is the bill really shifted the use of the Child Care Fund, which is how we fund the juvenile justice system. And it really kind of incentivized community-based services over out-of-home placement. So we're again shifting that prioritization. It expands the use of pre-arrest diversion, which is wonderful. And then a big thing that we had been working on for quite a while was eliminating most juvenile court fines and fees. And so we're very passionate about making sure we can be as great of a resource to local counties as well as our state partners who are working on implementing the bills. And so it's something we really try to dedicate a lot of our year to engaging in conversations and localized work in, yeah.
Have there been any other super significant legislation at the core of like juvenile justice?
Well, I would say, and forgive me for not knowing the date. I really should know. Michigan, within our 10-year of our name change, right? So that I want to say around there, Michigan actually raised the age of juvenile court jurisdiction to 18. So it's allowing 17-year-olds to access rehabilitative services. And so I think that that's a huge shift and a huge win, right? Because, you know, there are young folks and who should have access to those services. So I would say that's another big win that is still very exciting to see. And a lot of other states are also still fighting on as well and working toward.
And what is kind of, have you been able to kind of like witness the impact of these changes, like in actual youth, like even in your own like perspective?
You know, we not that long, it's still really early, I'll say. So they did just go into effect. So I think we'll see that impact over the next year to 5 years. But we were just recently in a community, and we were able to have conversations with young folks that were currently in out-of-home placement, and we were just chatting with them about fines and fees and trying to get their perspective. And they were really excited to hear that we were eliminating a majority of court costs as a state because you know, it's just crushing to our youth and families. And so I think knowing that that is such a shift, it alleviates a big burden off our families, to have to, in a moments of crisis, when they're navigating the juvenile justice system, to not necessarily have to worry about these additional costs and late fees that can compound and compound poverty. I think that that is just such an immediate effect and so exciting. That it just makes me, yeah, when it comes to fines and fees, it just makes me really excited to keep digging into that with communities and making sure folks are in sync about how we're letting folks know about the shift and all of that good stuff. But they were pretty stoked to hear about that change, which was great.
That's great. And then kind of going back to your name change, I think we've brought it up a few times, but what was the significance of that? Because it used to be called like the Michigan Council on Crime and Delinquency, right? Or something.
Yeah, crush that. Yeah.
And now it's changed. So what was the significance of that?
As like a team, right? It was really exciting in the sense of we're narrowing our lane, right? There are just so many wonderful folks in the adult reform space, and they're just doing wonderful work, and there's this whole ecosystem out there. And so I think it is really significant for an organization to say like, these are, you know, we're topical experts are in this space, but there needs to be folks digging in and supporting folks that really want to pivot their juvenile justice system and be that connector, that support system. And so I think to have an organization say like, no, we see these young people that are in this system, and we want to make sure they have access to the right services at the right settings and make sure that they're safe while navigating it. I think that's a very compelling change for any organization to make, for sure.
And is there still, like, did it used to be this organization, did it used to be kind of just like a general, like helping with general, like,
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. So we kind of were doing both.
I
So
see.
we had our foot in both waters, and so it was us kind of stepping back from the adult space and saying like, we'll dig into JJ. You know, there's all this rich and great folks and resources and that exist for those advocates in the adult side. So how do we pivot to JJ to really support kids more robustly, I would say. Yeah.
That makes sense. And was there like a specific event that sparked this redirection, or was it just, I don't know, a shift in mindset?
I'm not sure. I don't know if it was part of like our team's like kind of landscape of what was going on or what the exact impetus was. But it was something that I think was met with a lot of positive reception when that was broached. Yeah.
And like how did your sort of like vision have to shift after this rebranding? Because I'm sure there's like the task of helping juvenile justice specifically must be completely different from, or at least like different from what it was before. So how has the vision changed since then?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a deep pivot, right? Like, because the juvenile justice system is not the same inherently in its structure, or even the language is different than the adult system. And so it's not only that kind of, because the team was kind of already stepping in both waters, there was, of course, that familiarity and the knowledge was there. But I think it was just a bigger pivot of like, we're fully throwing our resources into this particular lane. And it was expanding, not only kind of maintaining, but how do we keep building those localized relationships with the JJ stakeholders specifically? So it was kind of almost like we have to not only drill in our focus, but also like how do we keep growing in this particular lane now that we've kind of pivoted back from the adult space?
And you've mentioned this a few times, but like, why is this work so important? Like, why is it so crucial to give these youth the resources that they need? Like, sort of why is your work so important?
Yeah, and I mean, this is kind of, I'll just answer this anecdotally, right? As my opinion, right? Not speaking on behalf of MCYJ, but the literature across disciplines, right, shows that when our kids and our families succeed, our communities just flourish, right? Like, particularly when we're taking care of the most vulnerable. And I do really perceive a lot of these kids that are systems involved to have very unique needs. And so when we all care about these young people, our whole community does really, really well, right? And these young people, they're facing a full spectrum of justice involvement. Like, we have kids that come into contact and are dismissed, but then there are kids that are facing out-of-home placement and they are removed from their families. And that inherently is a trauma in and of itself, right? To be removed from that community and that familiarity. And so these kids are experiencing a lot of needs and we have to prioritize them in order to prioritize the whole community. And we have a motto that's, kids who get in trouble are still kids. And we really believe that. And I personally really believe that. And so for me, it's like, we got to care about our kids, even if we don't necessarily see them, right? Because they're in this system that's often not inherently visible. And some of us might not even know we've had peers that are systems involved. But how do we make sure that they're set up to thrive across their life so that way we all succeed and we all win and we all have these wonderful communities that take care and nurture our children for the long term? I think it's just so important.
And what can other people do to help this mission? Like, are there ways that people can contribute to MCYJ, or just in general, how do people help this cause?
Yeah, definitely for kind of a first step for folks, definitely sign up for our newsletter by visiting our website. We send this monthly newsletter out that provides calls to action or, different ways, different literature, or maybe it's events and there's ways that you can just increase your knowledge base because I don't think necessarily everybody knows what our young people are experiencing. And again, of course, no one experience is the only. There's a whole, the whole, it runs the whole gamut. But the more you as a community member are aware of what your local kids are facing and young people, excuse me, are facing, the better in community spaces you can advocate for them and make sure there are spaces for them and their voices and their priorities. I'm a big believer in folks going to your local commissioner meetings and going to your local, county group councils or whatever you might have and talking about these issues, right? And saying like, what are we doing? What's our childcare fund budget? How are we investing in alternatives to detention? I think that's especially important if you have a juvenile detention in your backyard. Like, what are all this have in your community before a kid hits that point? I think is really important for us as constituents to know because it's our taxpayer dollars. Like, we should be informed. And so for me, like, step one is always follow those groups that are doing really cool things in this space. We have colleagues that intersect at a lot of different issue areas, especially, just looking at the school to prison pipeline space. Like, there's just so many groups advocating to make schools, which can be a JJ touch point, more welcoming and inclusive spaces. And so by being an informed community member, you can really start to see the gaps and be able to affect change that way. And so definitely, definitely, just start getting comfortable by reading about these spaces and following the news, because things are always happening, and it is important that we know what's happening to our young people. And try, when it could be as simple, right now we have a sign-on letter for juvenile defense. Doing that actually has a huge difference. Like, it makes a difference. And so taking those few moments to call your rep or, sign a letter, it goes far, and it does really help, especially with orgs as small as ours.
And that's kind of all the questions that I had, but is there anything else that you'd like to add or say?
No, I don't think so. I think I'm trying to see if I left anything out of my notes. I don't think so. I'm always happy, MCYJ, we're always happy to chat about if folks ever want overviews about juvenile justice and like how it actually works. We can always do that, but we're just always in the corner to chat with folks about all things juvenile justice if we can ever be of service.
Wait, do you have like volunteer opportunities for like people my age, or is this kind of just like.
That's something we're always trying to figure out, because we're not direct service. And so we do always appreciate when folks reach out about volunteering, because sometimes there are things happening. Our newsletter is a good way to find out about if there are those sporadic volunteer opportunities. And I know this sounds so cheesy, but honestly, following us on social media and resharing, it helps so much. Because a big thing we're passionate about is just education, education, education. Like, we just want people to know what the system is, and highlight the strengths and highlight areas of improvement and how people can affect change locally. Because again, our system is localized. And we have an entirely decentralized juvenile justice system. So that means that this is completely different in some respects, county to county. And so if you stay in the loop, then we'll be able to kind of stay in the loop and mutually, keeping us apprised and inviting us into your community to have conversations about juvenile defense or have conversations about the bill package. Like, we love that kind of stuff. And so the more you can spread the word and invite us into community, like, the better. We always appreciate that.
As Jen mentioned, one of the biggest things we can do as community members is educate ourselves, which I think applies both to juvenile justice, but also any topic, especially ones relating to social causes. You can find more information about MCYJ at miyouthjustice.org or follow MCYJ online at mi.youthjustice. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.